Good morning, everybody. I'm Jonathan Tweeney. I work for DEFRA. I'm in the Rights of Way Reform project team. I'm going to give you a quick run through the Deregulation Act, which we're working on at the moment. This came into being March last year, and currently we're working. There's a whole suite of secondary legislation that we have to introduce as part of the package, which actually consists of about 12 sets of separate regulations which need amended or actually need drafting completely from the start, such as the right to apply regulations. And then we've also got to do revised guidance as well. We'll be revising what is currently DEFRA Circular 109 and introducing new guidance, obviously, to go along with the Deregulation Act reforms as well. Now, we're sort of continuing to work with the stakeholder working group, which originally came up with the package of reforms. I notice there's a couple of illustrious members of that group here today. I'm sure they won't mind if you collar them and ask them about the work. We're doing quite well. Originally, last year we said we would aim to try and introduce all the secondary legislation and the guidance, and we're commencing it on the same date, and we would aim for a target of April 2016. We're not going to hit the April 2016 date. I think it was quite ambitious, like I say, with 12 sets of regulations to draft and produce. I think it was quite an ambitious target, but we'll be trying to introduce that as soon as possible afterwards. And we'll keep people up to date with the sort of when we might introduce it. Okay, so I'm just going to run through the main changes to the DMMO process. Obviously, there's also changes to the public path order process, but I'm going to concentrate just on the DMMO process today. So. Yes, you certainly will.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Sorry, I should have said that at the beginning. Okay, so what we've got, the current Schedule 14 in the Wildlife and Countryside Act has been replaced by a new Schedule 13A. And some of the main points in that, Spain Authority may inform the applicant that they already have copies of some of the documents relied on in the application and therefore do not need copies. Obviously, that's just extra work if applicants have to supply documents that a surveying authority holds already. Then we have the applicant may transfer the definitive map modification order application to an other nominated person who then becomes the applicant in law. I think there have been some transfer of applications in the past where the application is made in a sort of by an organisation, but this formally allows any one person to transfer an application to another person, and again it means the application isn't lost. The authority must carry out a preliminary assessment within 3 months of receipt and decide whether there is a reasonable basis for the application and inform the applicant of their decision. So that's a new system of having a preliminary assessment. Basically, the application is reviewed to see whether it meets a minimum test to carry on to be considered whether it should be determined, and the local authority has just 3 months to carry out that assessment. The authority must determine the application as soon as reasonably practicable after serving notice on the landowner, if the application obviously passes the preliminary assessment. That's another new thing where it's the local authority that's serving notice on the landowner rather than the applicant. Okay, so it's still new provisions within the new Schedule 13A. The surveying authority must establish whether the landowner would consent to the making of a definitive map modification order or would do so if the public right-of-way was to be altered so as to change its course, width or limitations. A modification consent order, so this is a brand new concept, a modification consent order. So basically what that is saying is whether landowner accepts that a right-of-way exists on his land, then he is able to negotiate with the local authority to change the course of that right-of-way for whatever reason, for business reasons, farming reasons. And that's a negotiation that just happens between the local authority and the landowner. Next one. If the authority has not determined the application within 12 months, the applicant or landowner may apply for a magistrate's court order. The court will be able to require the authority to carry out specified actions within a specified period. So currently it's the Secretary of State that people can appeal to if an application hasn't been dealt with within 12 months. So that's changed. So now you apply to the magistrate's court in a sort of similar way to Section 130 and obstructions works. And when you appeal to the magistrate's court, then the judge will consider the case, and he can then specify a time limit to the local authority for them to actually sort of determine the application. Next we've got, if the surveying authority decides not to make a definitive map modification order, the applicant has a statutory right of appeal. The applicant notifies the authority and must submit the matter to the Secretary of State for decision. So that's much as it is now, that the surveying authority, where it says it's not going to make a definitive map modification order, then you can appeal to the Secretary of State. Right, next we've got giving notice of orders will no longer entail advertisement in a local newspaper. A new requirement is for authorities to publish orders on their website. This is sort of quite a significant change, really. It's been very traditional for notice of orders to be given in a local newspaper. But that's actually very costly to a local authority. And with modern technology, it's felt that websites can serve the same function. But like I say, there will be considerable savings to local authorities with not having to comply with that requirement anymore. Going back to appeals, so having considered the appeal, the Secretary of State may, and these are the choices, uphold the authority's decision, obviously not to make an order, direct the authority to make an order, or make an order herself. The order is then otherwise processed in the same way as an opposed order. The order must be confirmed by the Secretary of State. So it's essentially saving the process where the an application could come to the Secretary of State twice. And now we've got a single process incorporated in the new Schedule 13 where the appeal and the confirmation is considered in the same process. So that's a considerable saving and streamlining in the process. Not pre-approved. He considers the appeal and whether an order should be made.
But does he then approve it later?
And then within the same process, if he decides that an order should have been made, then he'll confirm the order.
So it's automatically confirmed already?
Yeah.
Okay.
So moving on, then we've got also a new Schedule 14A, which replaces the old Schedule 15 in the Wildlife and Countryside Act. So some of the notable changes here are the power of the Secretary of State to decide a case on written reps alone is made explicit. I think there was sort of some debate previously on the right to be heard and whether that included written representations, and now it's been clarified within the Act that does include written representations. A modification consent order may be confirmed by the authority without reference to the Secretary of State, even if it is objected to. Obviously, that's quite a significant change, and I referred to modification consent orders earlier on. The authority will still give notice of the order, and people can make representations to the local authority, but those objections do not have to be referred to the Secretary of State. The local authority will just have to take account of them. And lastly, then, we've got the courts may quash the decision of the Secretary of State instead of quashing the order. I'm not sure if people are always aware of this, but when there's a statutory appeal to the High Court, the only provision is for the court to quash the whole order. So it means the whole process has to start again, rather than just a review of the decision, which again saves considerable time and money. So. So I'm just going to run over some of the main changes to the DMMO process introduced by the Deregulation Act. The Secretary of State may make regulations for a simplified Schedule 13A and 14A process to apply to modifications arising from administrative errors. So this is purely what is an administrative error. You don't have to use the full DMMO process. Obviously, there's some debate about what is an administrative error, and that's something the stakeholder working group is enjoying looking at, and you'll see that in due course. But it is just meant to apply to straightforward administrative errors. After the cut-off date, surveying authorities may not make an order to downgrade a public right-of-way where the only basis is the pre-1949 status of the way. So that's the impact of the 2026 cut-off date. For up to 12 months after the cut-off date, authorities may designate public rights of way to protect them from extinguishment for a prescribed period. Obviously, by the time we reach the cut-off date in 2026, there could be routes, valuable public rights of way that still aren't on the definitive map. And local authorities will not want them to be extinguished. So we're going to have a power for local authorities to designate those routes and protect them from extinguishment for a set period. Then we have where public right of way is...
What are the limitations on that period? Could it be 100 years?
Well, it's a prescribed period, so we'll have to prescribe it in regulation. So that's, again, something for the stakeholder working group to consider. Obviously, it has to be a realistic timescale. Though, you know, I think it's been discussed, sort of a year period would be sort of reasonable.
Would it be renewable?
No.
Just a year?
Yeah, it would be set within the regulations. So whatever the regulations, that would be it. Okay. And lastly, we have where public right-of-way is extinguished at the cut-off date, the public right-of-way becomes a private right-of-way for the benefit of the landowner. So that's something that was similarly introduced within NERC, where just because the public rights are extinguished at the cut-off date, it means anybody that needs access to their property has guaranteed access and a private right. So basically, that's it. I sort of just trying to give you sort of a flavour of the reforms we're doing. And I thought that the rest of the time, if anybody has got any questions on that, obviously it's already provoked some interest. If anybody wants to ask me a question, feel free to raise your hand and I'll try my best to answer it over here.
You mentioned the preliminary SIFT, I think it's called, the threshold.
Yeah, preliminary assessment, as we're calling it. Yeah.
Is there any appeal against that?
No, in theory, there's no statutory right of appeal within the regulations. In theory, you would be able to JR that, take it to judicial review. But it would maybe make more sense to try and gather more evidence and resubmit your application. Phil?
With the magistrates' court business, will the regulations say that, will they prescribe a fee for going to the magistrates? Because when this all was thought about originally, there wasn't a fee for going to the magistrates, and now it's £750 to cross the door.
Yes.
It's a lot more expensive than going to the Secretary of State.
Yeah, it's quite prohibitive, yes, I'd agree. It's not us that sets the rates for the magistrates' courts, it's the Ministry of Justice that sets that. So we have no power to put anything within legislation for that, I'm afraid. Good question here.
Am I right in understanding that you're saying that once an application has been made, it must be dealt with within 12 months? Is that a final decision?
Yeah, it must be determined. So the local authority has to say whether it will or won't make an order.
So how can some local authority have a huge backlog, like with 300 applications, possibly meet that?
Well, essentially, what I should have said from the outset, really, is that these provisions apply to new applications, essentially.
So the old ones?
So are still being held under the old system. We're still looking at that. I've got to put a caveat on that, because we had looked at introducing transitional provisions where it would apply to old applications, and we haven't completely bottomed that out yet.
So is that going to be backdated to April 2015, or from when these regulations, your advisory notes, come out?
It's from when the regulations are commenced. So
that will be this year?
This year, yes.
And just one other thing, briefly. If you go to the magistrate's court, who pays? Is it the applicant or the local authority?
Well, the applicant has to pay, as Phil was saying, to lodge that application. Okay. You've got a question there?
If the landowner and the highway authority, surveying authority, agree to a DMO and a version on it, you're saying that the applicant can raise an objection, but it can be ignored, or at least it doesn't have to be taken into account by the highway authority?
If it goes through the modification consent process, yes.
So it could just be ignored?
Well, it's not ignored. The local authority would have to show that it had taken account of any representations that it had received.
To what extent?
I can't measure that. You'd have to show in any decision, they would have to say, we received these objections, which objected on the basis of this. Our reply to that is... Well, that's not a reasonable response, is it? If a local authority responded like that, then you can challenge them.
Where? If I can't get the Secretary of State?
Well, either you can raise it as a complaint, because that's not a reasonable way to deal with a written objection, or you could judicial review it.
But that's putting it out of the financial reach of the user groups.
That is the process. What I would say is that is a particular process to help a landowner. What we have here is a package of reforms. It's a balanced package of reforms agreed by all the stakeholders. So where certain parts of the package favour the landowner, then there are other parts of the package that favour the user. So I don't think you can always sort of highlight a single element of the package and say that's unfair, because it's seen as a whole and it's been agreed as a whole, and that's why everybody's happy with it. Good question here. I think we're using the process of using the stakeholder working group as our sounding board, and they are looking at all the drafts of the guidance and the regulations.
So it's not likely
the
last
eventually? No, I don't think so.
Sure.
Sorry.
What was the question at the back there?
What was the question? Was, were LAFs going to be consulted over the draft regulations and draft guidance for the Deregulation Act reforms? No, essentially. We're using the stakeholder working group as our sort of advisory body. Sorry, you had a question.
Yeah. Proposal 25 provides that routes shown on the local street gazetteer with carrying public rights are saved from extinguishment. Is that going to be in the regulations?
Yeah, that will be included in the regulations, yeah. Anything on the list of streets or in the street gazetteer will have a saving provision.
Can you confirm that the public have a right to view the street gazetteer?
I don't think that's part of our legislation, the Department of Transport, but I understood that they do have a right to see it.
So you believe they do have a right?
I think it's, it says it in the Act, but like I said, it's not what that Act doesn't belong to DEFRA, it belongs to the Department for Transport, so I can't give you a definitive answer, but I thought it did.
Right. The Minister of Transport doesn't think it
does. Right.
Applications to correct errors in the local street gazetteer also protected in the same way that definitive map modification applications are protected?
No, there's no provision for that. It's only applications for DMMOs that will be protected at the 2026 cut-off date. Up.
John, I wonder if it's helpful to explain that the there will be guidance around the peer review assessment.
Yes.
So it won't be determined by a local authority just making up the standards.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Pippa. Sorry, I should have made that, really, shouldn't I? Yes, the preliminary assessment, which I was sort of discussing earlier on, which obviously decides whether the local authority will take the application forward for consideration, it's actually statutory guidance will be drafted for that. So the local authority will have to comply with that. Again, that's been consulted on with the stakeholder working group. Anything else? We've got a question there.
You said there was a balance between the landowners and people wanting access. Can you tell us a bit more about the gains that people wanting access have got?
Well, there's quite a lot of reforms within the package. I'm not going to go through it. I think you can look that up yourself. I think they're all there. You know, there's over, 32 proposals within the package. So, you know. Yes, just in the front.
This top thing, Secretary, is that simplified schedule process applied to administrative errors.
Yes.
I went to a thing at the Francis Taylor building where they were suggesting that was making it very difficult to have things reassessed unless you discover evidence. And they were the barristers there were banging on about what counts as discovered evidence.
Yeah.
It seems to me that I'm not sure how this thing here is going to work. Is it going to get around that one? Because I know of a particular case where there's a footpath that is supposed to join another footpath on a boundary between two areas, and it doesn't.
Yeah.
So that the Bristol coming there, North Somerset.
Yeah.
It's obvious. But whose error is it? And do you have to discover evidence of this?
Well, it's local authority would have to investigate that, really, and make an assessment. Like I said, we will sort of do some guidance to local authorities so they've got something to go on. That's the best I can really say about that. Like I say, there was initially quite a lot of debate about what an administrative error was, but then once the group sort of started talking about it and we started thinking about it, I think that the ones that have been identified are fairly obvious. So I think once you see the guidance, that will be quite helpful to people.
I just wonder if the barristers know about this.
Well, if they're good barristers, they will in the end. We've got a question here just in the end.
What's good barristers can no doubt make a lot of money out of it. Given that this is civil law, surely it won't be on the balance of the probabilities, won't it? Any decisions? Won't the balance of probabilities, because the balance of probabilities is a fundamental sort of principle within sort of civil law.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, with the case of gentlemen,
Yes. No, that's a good point. Yes.
Be able to apply that rule.
Yes.
Will that be stated in the Act?
No, it wouldn't be stated within the regulations itself, no. So we've got a question here. Yeah.
I just want to come back to this backlog, because if this is going to be for everything moving forward, there are huge backlogs, and there's probably a lot of local authorities that could actually have 15, 20, 25 years worth of backlog. So I think it's very, very important that actually gets looked at, because otherwise they're just going to sit there while the local authorities have to concentrate on all the new things, because if they don't, then they can get things forward.
Yeah, we're very aware of that, so it's a good point. But hopefully the sort of what the package as a whole does, sort of like it streamlines the process, so obviously makes it easier for local authorities to actually process orders. Oh, got a question here at the front.
When you say that the local authorities will have to put any applications on their websites, will there be a statute or advisory period for how long they appear, where they appear? Will they be easy to find? For some of you that's in the back sticks and our broadband thing's absolutely trash, it will be a struggle to find these things. And I'm just concerned we will miss a whole lot of stuff that will go through because we won't be consulted.
Well, you can always ask to be consulted on orders by a local authority. You register with them if you want to see every single order. You can do that already.
Like a sort of ticket alert, if they're getting one, they will automatically tell you that it's coming up.
Well, you can do that already with the local authority. Say, I want to be notified of every single order.
Can you?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go back to my local authority.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sorry.
You made reference or made frequent reference to the stakeholder working group.
Yeah.
We were sent details of the composition of the proposed composition of that group some time ago, on which we fed back, adding groups that we thought were stakeholders and should be involved. I've not seen any modification to the composition of the stakeholder working group since then. Was any cognizance taken of that feedback?
Well, we have had sort of lobbying from people suggesting names and organisations that of people, so we were always sort of aware of that, and more recently the membership of the group has changed, but the balance remains the same. We have five people representing local authorities, more or less, five people representing users, and five people representing landowners, and we've kept that balance because that's essential